podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Halloween has been and gone, but if the fright fest that is international football isn't enough to set the chills up your spine, then surely yet another injury to one of Jurgen Klopp's senior players will. And when it's another centre-back, and when it's Joe Gomez, and when it's on international duty once again, it leaves that bitter taste and the bewilderment making you wonder what the point of the entire enterprise was in the first place. I'm Eddie Gibbs, and welcome once more to Off The Wall, the podcast here on Anfield Index, where we like to give you a small flavour of some of the content available over on the paywall side of our channel at Anfield Index Pro. Now, usually during the boredom of an international break, we are scrambling our brains here at AI Pro to find alternative content. With no Reds matches to discuss, perhaps an interview with a Liverpool legend or something of a more whimsical nature to pass the time. But oh no, no, no. The year 2020 is the Grim Reaper that wants to keep on reaping. And we find ourselves focused on the unfortunate patella tendon injury Joe Gomez has suffered whilst training with England. No sooner had I watched Andy Robertson gleefully celebrating leading Scotland to their first international tournament since 1998 than I was listening to the latest Fatigue Index podcast and hearing our resident sports scientist Simon Brundish, along with sports physiotherapist Marty Lovren discussing the full ramifications of the injury that Joe Gomez has suffered. It certainly brought me back down to earth with a thud, and if you're of the faint-hearted disposition, I'd probably advise you to stop listening to this podcast before I let those two guys loose on your ears in a few moments. Now, before we play the latest Fatigue Index podcast, I wanted to share with you a couple of other AI Pro shows that would be worth your time this weekend, before our focus shifts back to the real action next week with the visit of a table-topping Leicester City. So first of all, there's Old School. Now, for those who have been listening to our podcast before the days of AI Pro, then the names of Gags Tandon and Dave Hendrick should be very familiar to you. The two OGs were recording together again this week and looking at what Liverpool may need to do in the transfer market come January following this injury to Joe Gomez. If you want to go back a bit further and delve into the history a bit of Liverpool, then we have a Scouser Tommy show out as well. Jim Boardman is back, and this time he's joined by Jan Gorski Mashir together to take us back to the days of Bill Shankly and Jan's formative years as a Red. An absolutely brilliant story how Jan came to be a Liverpool fan. This is followed by a look at what Jan deems to be Liverpool's greatest 11 players from his many years following the Reds. So well worth a listen. That series has been quite fascinating. Jim speaking to the very various AI Pro contributors about how they became Liverpool fans and, of course, those greatest 11s. And I'm sure you're in for a treat when you listen to Jan Gorski Mashir discuss his. There's also Under Pressure, our flagship stats and analysis show. Gags Tandon is back alongside Dan Kennett, Simon Brundish and Dan Rhodes to draw a final line under that 1-1 scoreline with Man City and their comprehensive analysis and stats from the game. Many people tell us the Under Pressure podcast is worth a subscription fee alone at Anfield Index Pro, and I'm sure the game with Man City and the analysis from that will be no different. Now, next week, it'll likely be back to our normal range of preview content. Jan Mulby will be back with his weekly podcast alongside Trev Downey. Rival Recon will return with Harry Setti quizzing a Leicester City fan. Guy Drinkle will dissect Jurgen Klopp's press conference and likely discover how the squad is settling in their new state of the art training facility along at Kirby. I think Mo Chatra has a money talks lined up as well. I'll be hosting him on that next week, and he'll most likely be looking at why pay-per-view matches have failed, amongst other things. Then once the games are back underway, it's pretty much back to full throttle. I don't think there's going to be a period of games quite like this, and Our ever-popular post-match Raw, which records on the final whistle with Trev Downey and guests. Plus shows like Your Incision, Rate Don't Hate, they will all be back as soon as the action resumes. Now, to enjoy all this fantastic content, we want to let you know that you can get AI Pro absolutely free for 7 days. To sign up, all you have to do is head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com. There is zero obligation to continue after the free trial, and you can cancel at any point. If you decide to stick around, then of course we hope you will, then the cost is only £4.99 per month, or £39.99 per year. So with no football this weekend, there's never been a better time to delve into what we offer at AI Pro. There's not only these shows, there's everything from our back catalogue, all the interviews with famous players, our show with Liverpool's greatest living legend, Sir Kenny Dalglish, as well, is all there. You can go back and listen to any show that's ever been on the channel before. We have free apps for iOS and Android, as well as the usual options of all your favourite podcast feeds and apps that you may use already. I'd also quite like to draw your attention to AnfieldIndex.shop. This is our fast-growing retail store, from official LFC merchandise to those lovely golden Premier League sleeve badges for you to iron onto your kit at home. Of course, our bespoke range of prints and clothing are also there, very popular. And we've made gift vouchers available as well for the festive season that's ahead, and there'll be a whole range of stuff that we'll be doing on the shop as Christmas approaches. Don't want to jump the gun too much on that, but just keep your eyes peeled on the site. I should add that as an Anfield Index listener, you can use coupon code AIPRO10. So that's AIPRO with the number 10 on the end to save yourself 10%. So please do pop on over to AnfieldIndex.shop and take a look around. We do appreciate all of the support we've had since we launched that retail store, and hopefully you'll find gifts for Reds in your life, or even things you can ask family and friends to give you for Christmas. I know it's always hard to think of ideas. What do you give the man or woman that has everything is what I always like to say, but I'm sure there'll be something that floats your boat on there, and it might be something to ask your parents, your friends, your family to buy you there for Christmas as well. Of course, we'd also love to hear your feedback on any of the shows we do on Anfield Index or Anfield Index Pro, and the best way to do that is to join our free Discord community, a thriving community of Reds underpinned by healthy opinion and debate. And the place to do just that is anfieldindex.com/discord. That's DISCORD. It's completely free to join. You will not regret it. So many people that I've asked to go and join it, or suggested they go and join that, I said, I don't know how I did without this. It's so much more intuitive and enjoyable than the regular social media that the Liverpool fans tend to use. You really will enjoy it. AnfieldIndex.com/discord. Alternatively, we are on those traditional socials. You can find us on Facebook, just search for Anfield Index, or of course on Twitter, two handles there for you. We're at Anfield Index or at Anfield Index Pro. So without further delay, here it is, not for the faint-hearted, as I said earlier, Simon Brundish and Marty Loughran. It's the latest Fatigue Index podcast from Anfield Index Pro.
Right, hi, welcome to another Emergency Fatigue Index. Jesus Christ, how many more of these are we going to do this season? Marty is online, join me for his expert guidance. What a day, Marty, what a couple of days.
Oh, it's been terrible. It's been terrible. It's kind of that domino effect that we talked about on the Virgil pod. It's it's rearing its head.
Yeah. As we've seen Gags and Dave talk about it on Twitter, lambasting not buying an extra centre back, but we've talked about this from the beginning of the season, that it was a gamble, and that if one goes down, then three can easily go down, and what can you do? You just get some bad luck sometimes.
Yeah, like the Van Dijk one was bad luck. And all of these then are as a result of that one episode of bad luck. Yeah. Unfortunate as that is.
Yeah. And if Matip hadn't gone down in the first place, that it would have left us in a slightly less precarious position all round, really.
Yeah. But it does seem strange that we didn't buy with their records. You know, as good as we are with stats and sourcing players for transfers based on their availability, that we don't look at that in terms of our own squad, or that we've looked at the availability of Gomez and Matip and not replace Lovren. It just, maybe there was nobody there. Maybe we didn't have the finances. Maybe there was no one there that fitted what we wanted, but it just it's strange, and it has it's really coming back to bite us now.
It has, but I would always refer back to the fact that Lovren came in on big money and he was first choice. And what happened was we improved our defence around him and pushed him down to fourth choice because we got better players. It's really, really hard to buy a fourth choice defender who was even as good as Lovren.
Yeah, that's true.
So, unless you're going to buy somebody that's coming in to be first choice, you're always going to be really disappointed by them, or you're buying somebody that wants to be fourth choice, which is just weird. And I'm not sure that, that personality would fit in our squad anyway. So it is what it is. We're stuck. We're here now. How many centre-backs do we have that fit? Theoretically, we've got Matip, and Fabinho is trained properly for 5 days now. So, and we all know that he's the best centre-back in the world, really. That's kind of it, isn't it? We've got the two kids. Well, Nat's not a kid. He's actually older than Joe Gomez. But he changes how we play considerably. Darth loves that. And then we've got Reese, who is seen as mini Virgil, but he's not close. He is a very, for the moment, serviceable, fairly quick, fairly powerful, fairly comfortable on the ball academy product that might go on to be a good player in years in the future.
Yeah, and we've got Van der Berg, who seems to have disappeared after coming in with a bit of a profile, and he's just disappeared. So obviously, the Phillips and Williams have jumped ahead of him, so something stalled in Van der Berg's progression, where he doesn't seem to be trusted to come in and fill a spot at the moment.
He's a name. He is a kid. He's still actually younger than both of the lads we're talking about, but we know his name because we bought him and he didn't come in as... We didn't actually develop him from 10, which we did with Reese. So I've no great judgment of him. I definitely don't have any definitive... judgment of his progress or anything. We largely wouldn't know his name if we hadn't bought him in at this stage, his age. I don't know if he's good or bad, whatever. He's not part of this, so it's kind of irrelevant. So I think we probably need to talk about Joe and the mechanism of his injury and the long-term prognosis, I would have thought.
Yeah, none of those things are good. So... Joe has, we believe, completely ruptured his patella tendon, which is the big tendon underneath your kneecap that runs from your kneecap to the top of your shin. Huge tendon. As broad as it is long, it transmits and transfers huge forces from our quadriceps to our lower leg. And he's today went through... what the club have described was a successful surgery to repair the patella tendon. That's not an easy job. So the tendon either rips off the underside of the kneecap or it splits in two in the middle. And I spoke to a knee surgeon today, and he was describing how difficult this was, and he just kept saying, "Poor Joe, poor Joe. This is a huge, huge injury, huge operation, very difficult to perform, and the prognosis isn't good." The stats show that only 50% of players in the NFL who have a patella tendon rupture repair successfully make it back to the NFL. So probably that's the most brutal sport to get back to. But even in football, the stats aren't great. It's probably about a 75-80% return rate, but it can take up to 2-3 seasons to return to baseline performance. So this is a huge one. This is way bigger than his ACL injury. We're looking at probably a 12-month process to get him back onto the pitch for us. This isn't just going to be pre-season. This is probably going to be next autumn.
Sadly, I think the the conclusions people might draw from the NFL comparison there is that the NFL is more brutal. It is from an impact perspective, but it's not from a running perspective. Football actually has much higher loads and much higher metabolic demands on both the energy systems of a footballer, but also of the muscles and tendons, because they are used so much more in a 95-minute period to accelerate, to stop, to start, all of the forces transferred in and out, and to sustain those forces, particularly with tendons. And American football, you see it, and each down lasts for less than 3 seconds. So the total time of playing, if you're on the pitch for as a running back or a wide receiver, would be less than 12 minutes. It's just not the same. The demands on a footballer are huge, and it is quite a worry. But then we have Joe Gomez, who has shown, to put a positive spin on this, he has shown a capacity to return from serious injuries psychologically and to reach real elite performance. He is a big boy. He has got all of the physical mass that we would like to train for before an injury like this to enable a recovery as much as possible. And he's young, and he has the best surgeon and best rehab process in the world, really. So we've put him environmentally in the best situation, but it's a brutal injury.
Yeah, it is. The surgeon described it today as trying to stitch together two horses' tails. You know, that's how bad it can be with a complete rupture. And you know, there's several different approaches. None of them are ideal. They're, even when you think you've done a good job, so you come out of the surgery and the press release might be that it's gone successfully, we might then find that it's they have stitched it too tight, or they haven't stitched it tight enough. That causes the kneecap to sit too high on the thigh or too low, and that creates massive issues around how the knee moves. So too high and the knee won't bend enough. Too low and it'll cause pain and not enough force transmission. So this is a really, really delicate surgery, and there's no way of knowing. Basically, them announcing that it was a successful surgery today just means that the surgery was completed. Yeah. We have no idea if this has been a success until months and months down the line. Like, I know you're trying to put the positive spin on it, and I seem to be Mr. Negative here, but this is a big one. Like, this, for me, this is on a par with what Ox did in terms of the severity of this and the career implications for Joe. Thankfully, it's not the same knee as his previous ACL. It's the other knee. But he has had a major Achilles injury, two ankle surgeries, and now two knee surgeries. It's not good at such a young age.
No, and consider that what you're saying about the tightening process of this surgery. I would liken it to like the tracking of a car. So if the tracking's off, if it's slightly tighter on one side, then in best case scenario, what's going to happen is a cascade effect of injury, of compensation injury elsewhere in soft tissue around the rest of the body, because basically his body wants to turn right in a little short circle constantly. So he'll always be fighting this tracking. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And that's, you know, if there's an issue with the tightening of the tendon, that's the best case scenario that you're describing, whether it's too tight on the left or too tight on the right. I'm talking about it's been too tight right across the tendon, and it's then left it too short, or it's not been tightened enough and it's then been too long. That then leaves the kneecap in the wrong place. And the kneecap is the fulcrum around which the whole knee moves and transmits force. So if the pivot point's in the wrong place, then that knee ain't going to move properly ever. So, and I have worked with guys who looked like they were doing very well until they went to end stage rehab, and then they failed at end stage rehab. So the more complex task, getting back to sport, they really struggled with. It was really painful. And the surgeon came back and looked at it and said, you know what, I've made a mistake here. We're going to have to start again. And he went in and redone the operation. So that guy had gone 9-10 months and then had to start again. And he never made it back. You know, and probably the 50-50 rate from the NFL, I've only rehabbed a few of these because they're so rare. But my stats that I have seen in my clinic is probably 50-50 as well. And we're not talking rehab and back to the Premier League.
I saw a meta study earlier and it was 26%.
Yeah.
That's the, yeah, this is not ACL standard. People are terrified of ACL. Everyone was like, as soon as the knee rumor went around, people were scared that it was going to be an ACL. But thing is, an ACL is a much more modern surgery and we are much more aware of it, but the process of rehab from ACL is much better refined and the outcomes are much more positive.
Yeah.
This is a much, if it's an almost archaic kind of surgery because there's no other way. So yeah, it just feels kind of brutal.
And we get good at rehabbing and we get good at doing surgery on injuries we see all the time. ACLs are really common. Like any one time, like there's three full-time physios in my practice. We have 30 ACL patients every week, all year round for the last 10 years. I've maybe seen 6 patella tendon repairs that I can think of in the last 10 years. You know, wow. So, you know, and that's why I'm liking it to the legs of the ox multi-ligament injury, where you know, those are the ones that you'll remember for the rest of your career. There's 5 or 6 really bad ones, you know, so that's the kind of level that we're talking about here with Gomez, how difficult this is going to be. And this is going to have ramifications down. Like, even if he makes it back, and we hope he does, and I'm sure he's the best possible hands through that, you know, career minutes, you know, the research shows that this takes time off your career. It limits your career in terms of performance, and it limits your career in terms of longevity as well. This is a career change in injury. There's no doubt about that for Joe Gomez.
And sadly, he was coming off a career high season into the shortest ever turnaround, into the shortest ever preseason. And this is in an 11-week period, he's only ever played more minutes once before.
Yeah.
And it,
we talk about sticking the fingers in the socket. We were doing that with Joe and probably just had no other option. There was no other available players. He was the one that we had to fall back on.
Yeah, that was it. And he had already suffered an injury in week 3 of the season, just a small minor one that made him miss 2 games, but it was already beginning. This season is absolutely brutal. I think we're just about to enter probably the hot spot of the season. My feeling, in the preseason pod predicted that the period after the second international break was going to be catastrophic for the league as a whole, and that'll be where the we go down to 3 point we go to a game every 3.5 days for the next 5 weeks. So this is going to be the period also where the smaller teams start to feel it too, because they've got some midweek games coming.
Yeah, I think we'll see more, maybe not more tendon ruptures, but we will see a lot of injuries, and we will see a lot of catastrophic injuries across the whole league, and our rivals will suffer them too. It is only a matter of time. And, you know, historically, you know, people talk about the NBA lockout and you know, those lockouts in American sport where you've had massive amount of injuries and massive amount of catastrophic injuries. I think this is the Premier League's turn now for the next 2 to 3 months. This, you know, we'll be talking about this for the next 10 years of how bad this period was for injury.
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance that we lose some, like, famous players. That they're out and they never come back quite the same, and it's going to be delineated by this season.
Yeah.
Honestly. Which is sad. We're lots of questions here, but do we think that fatigue played a role? I absolutely do. But we've kind of just laid out the numbers of the actual load that he and lots of players in the league have been under. But he, unlike, so if we compare his basically 1,200 minutes to our players that have played the most. So Ginny's played 14 and a half and Robbo has played 15 and a half and is currently playing tonight. But both of those have shown an efficiency of movement and a capacity to repeat this volume constantly throughout a season before, over multiple seasons. And Joe's never done that because it's the thing that we talk about, that previous injury is the biggest predictor of future injury. It doesn't mean somebody is injury prone or they've got weak muscles. It means that something did happen to them and there is a consequence to that. And if it's a catastrophic injury, then very often there are some kind of compensation that occurs 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years afterwards. It can accumulate, but it's very likely. Is that right?
Yeah, that's 100% accurate. Every catastrophic injury that we have will suddenly change how the body moves, where we put pressure on our feet, how we change our center of mass, how we load our major joints. You know, not just the joint that's affected, but you know the joints above and below that. That will inevitably put extra strain on all our tissues, and when we're under fatigue, then those tissues that are taking that extra strain will inevitably fail to some degree.
So
as
Joe,
well as the pre you know, the actual injury that you have, you know, no injury ever heals 100%. So there will be that residual weakness in the previous injury, plus then the knock on effect through the compensations.
Yeah, and the way I've always thought about this is that injuries that have a predisposition to be caused by eccentric loading, which is there are three types of muscle contraction. There is concentric, which is like the acceleration or the shortening of the muscle, so like a bicep curl on the way up, or the as you push off doing a sprint, and then eccentric, which is the lengthening of the muscle, which I like to refer to as the break, and you would use to slow down. And then there's an isometric one, which is not is mostly not used, but if any of you've been in a gym, a wall squat, or if ever a very obvious example is if you try to open a jar that's too tight and it doesn't move, so you're squeezing really, 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 really hard, but nothing's moving, then that's an isometric contraction. Right. So if an injury has a certain type of injury has a predisposition to be caused by an eccentric load, such as a hamstring tear at the end of range while slowing down from sprinting or braking to change direction from sprinting, that fatigue plays a significant role in increasing that risk. Would you agree?
Yes. And with an injury like this, it has to be a deceleration injury. It has to be an eccentric component to this to produce
5 seconds. 5 second sprint and into a drop jump.
That's what it was. Oh. Yeah, that's it then.
So yeah. Literally, they're training an eccentric contraction deliberately. He just his quads couldn't fire quite early enough. Weight transferred forward, pop.
Yeah. So he's dropping down into that drop jump. The quadricep muscle can't cope with the load. The tendon has to take extra load as a result, and then it fails. And that's usually where the failure point is in a younger athlete. And the older you get, the more likely it is to be a bony fail at the patella. So at Joe's age, it's more likely to be a mid-portion rupture. So mid-patella tendon, and that's the difficult one to. They're all difficult, you know, but the one that's mid-portion is the difficult one to stitch back together.
So there's a long-winded answer of yes, fatigue played a role in this. Sadly, as in, to be fair, would you attribute fatigue to a grade 2 calf pull?
Yes.
Yeah, the simple answer,
For these guys, yeah.
Yes, Trent very likely also overloaded from playing too many games, and there you go. So Trent had, where we got? Six. Trent had 7 games in 28 days. No, that can't be right. It's easier if I count. 20. This is good radio. 12. And there we go. 23 days. 7 games in 23 days. That's a hot period. And he played all but 29 minutes of those. And it's been kind of a struggle as well, high octane minutes for that, because this has been a tough period for Liverpool, isn't it? So, there is going to be fatigue in that. So, depressing enough, what do we do about it now? what do we do with the squad? Dave asked about transfers, because we are like 7 weeks away from the transfer window. So we have from the next game, no, it's less than that, actually, it's 4.5. From the next game, we'll have 12 games in 43 days, which leads us to January, when we can replace a centre-back or whatever we're going to do, which is a game every 3.56 days. We've got 4 full days of full rest within there. So if there's a game day plus 4, which is a full rest day, then it's likely that our centre-backs could play both games before and after that, but all the rest of that. So that only entails 3 of the next 12 games. So it's very likely our centre backs aren't playing repeat games apart from for those 3.
Because we had this discussion on Discord before the Gomez injury, and because I'd suggested that there was some of those double fixtures, so that, you know, playing Saturday or playing at the weekend and playing midweek, that Matt could survive because there was a full recovery day there. We were going Saturday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I've seen your tweet today, and I agree with all of those that Williams plays all the Champions League games, and Phillips comes in for all the dross games, and we play Matip and Fabinho for the top half
Spurs. Games. Yeah, it's Leicester, Wolves, Spurs. That's what I have for them.
Yeah.
And we'll gradually, my thinking is that we gradually start to build their chronic load, so that Matip has, in the past, played full seasons before. It's just been a while. But if we're smart about it and we carefully build his chronic load, then we need him to be doing this, but we just have to be smart about that process.
Yeah, because that's the thing. As these dominoes start to fall, we need to realise that Williams is a kid. He's not robust enough to play Premier League football every week for Liverpool Football Club. Phillips has been at Stuttgart last year and had a good season, but he's not robust enough to play Champions League and Premier League games every week for Liverpool either. You know, so we have to be really careful with these kids. And then Fabinho's as robust as he has shown to be over his career. He's had that injury last year, and then he's come back and had another one this year. And we're asking him to play a position that he's only ever played a couple of times in his life, and it involves very different movement skills than what he's used to. And that is going to be an injury risk as well. So we do need to be very, very, very careful. And I think you, barring another injury, you probably could plot out exactly who's going to play, when and where from now to Christmas. And that, you know, Klopp will have to sit with the science team and plan this out weeks in advance.
Yeah. But we have a great science team, so we're as those things go, we're in quite a good spot. We've got lots of midfield, thankfully, back now. We keep faffing around with this two-man midfield, which is I find is garbage, but we keep managing to sneak a win here or there with it, which also then enables Shaq to come in. We're thankfully in a really, really good position that we've not been in before. In that we probably need one win from the three remaining games to guarantee, but we don't. We're through in Champions League. So if we play deliberately a strong team next week, then and we don't lose, we're through. And then we've got two games at the end what we could do anything we like with. So I'm fairly sure we'll see Nico and Tsimikas will. I would be genuinely surprised if we don't start to bed in Tsimikas in Champions League in a competition he is much more comfortable and he knows about before he integrates in the Premier League as well. And Robbo, who is currently on target for 71 game season, needs to not play sometimes.
Yeah, of course. Like, you definitely, I think we're going to see some rotation at the fullbacks, or else we are going to be in serious bother if we don't have any fullbacks to pick from and no centre half.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're going to do there, but I think we seem to be in a good spot with the midfield coming back. Even Ox is on the precipice of actual training, so we could have an abundance of midfielders. And screw it, just play two at the back, we'll be good. We'll suddenly see the Black Baresi appear as Ginny is the greatest centre back of all time. That would be quite fun. I would be up for that for sure. Against most teams in this league, to be fair, because I don't think there's an awful lot of great quality knocking around. Even City didn't particularly trouble us an awful lot, did they? We're going to have to modify load as much as we possibly can, and there'll be lots of rotation that we've probably on a level that we've never seen before, I would imagine. If you get a chance and you haven't seen the my little fatigue index graphic from the spreadsheet, then do have a look, because it kind of evidences the stuff we've been saying either way. Was there anything else we needed to talk about? Gags gave us some questions, didn't he?
Yeah, Dave wanted us to have a look at Ibrahima Konate from Leipzig and have a look at his injury history, because he seems to be rumoured to be a transfer potential target. But it's not good. It doesn't fill me with much confidence, given...
Yeah, you don't want to buy that lad.
No. So the background is he had one full season at Leipzig and played 3,700 minutes at 19 at centre-back. And then last season, played the first 10 games and had some sort of hip tendon muscle injury.
It was a torn rec fem.
Torn rec fem. Well, it must have been a ruptured rec fem, because he missed full
year. It was distal, and it was a bit of a mess by all accounts.
Yeah, he's missed 36 games since then. And you know, he's just coming back. He hasn't shown us any evidence that he can come back from this. We look at this differently if this was a 24-year-old who had done this injury at 19 and then had been able to put, you know, back-to-back seasons injury-free off the back of this. But I don't think we're buying a 21-year-old who has been overplayed as a 19-year-old for 3,700 minutes, has a major muscle injury, and hasn't really returned to fitness since.
No, this would be the ultimate red flag from the performance team. When I looked at the data, I was staggered that Dave was suggesting it.
And then we're going to ask him to go into a new team, a new coaching setup, a new science setup, completely new surroundings, new league, new teammates, with know all our centre backs and say, "Hey, here you go, let's play every game." Like it would be the most on Liverpool thing that we have done in years. I don't think Edwards is going after him. Unfortunately, as good as he may be or may look to be, I can't see it. Unfortunately,
no. He makes Ox look like Suarez. yeah, that's not a good idea. Have you had a look at all at Pamecano? Never. I'd heard of people knocking. It's people that listen to this or listen to you, Pete, should be aware now. I have no idea about foreign players. Not that they're foreign, just that they don't play for Liverpool. So I don't pay any attention to any other teams. And people ask me, who would you replace this guy with? Who would you replace this guy with? I haven't got a clue. I'm looking at Upamecano's numbers, and he looks like he plays a lot, and that he plays in the Champions League a lot as well, which looks awesome. And that he fits way more into the performance profile of a Liverpool signing. But I'm looking, and he's missed 40 games in the last 2.5 years. So maybe not.
He's missed half a season with an injury in 18-19. And both these guys are younger than Nat Phillips and Gomez.
Yeah. I feel like if we're going to buy somebody, you don't buy another kid to be fourth choice. You go and buy a 27-year-old that probably does the one or two things you really need but isn't top drawer at the other stuff. And you can make do with his failings because you've got a partner that does those things. Maybe we can fix this guy, but he's a much better version than the other dude. But even then, he's quite a big risk. And why are you buying in extra risks?
No, we need to mitigate risk. Like we need the next centre back that comes in needs to be bulletproof. If we're keeping Mata Gomez, or particularly if we're keeping Gomez, the next guy has to be bulletproof. And we're getting Van Dijk back off at ACL. And we don't...
Exactly. So he's not going to fall straight back into, this is Van Dijk and he plays every minute forever.
Yeah.
Because he is Van Dijk that's had an ACL injury at 29.
I think David Alaba is the safer bet, who's available on a free in the summer.
Sure.
Buyer might offload him in the window and look to get some money for him. I think that at 28 and having played, has a history of being able to play Champions League and league football, I think he'd be safer.
I think that's kind of answered all of the questions. We've got a live bunch of dudes. Is there any question you want us to discuss? No, I think we're good. Oh, Lubo has always got questions. I think we're good. I think that was a really interesting insight from me, from you. And I just spilled lots of nonsense, which I always do. So I really appreciate your time, Marty. I think we need to do one of these when we're just chatting about load and not worrying about people dying. That'd be tremendous,
I miss those ones.
Yeah, just looking through spreadsheets and stuff. That's fun.
Talking about how great we are at player availability.
Exactly. Right. Before I get even more depressed, Sun Chu is awesome, but he's out forever. So don't throw those dudes at me. And we're not buying him. So I think it's unlikely we buy anybody just to make everybody else more depressed. So thanks. Hopefully, I'm not going to do one of these again until preseason. That will be amazing. Otherwise, I'll just see you on UP. Cheers, boys.
Social Podcast Network.